Chapter 13. A Tragic Magic. Passion and Addiction. No man ever steps in the same river twice. Heraclitus. We all need rhythm, repetition, and ritual in order to find structure in our lives. There is something natural and deeply relaxing in repeating patterns. There is a certain ease in the predictability of how we flow. We need patterns because in a way we are an evolution of patterns. However, when the psyche is in conflict with itself, or when we have a conflict with certain aspects of experience, we lose balance in our grasping toward patterns as the only means through which to access that relief, release, or inner peace. We start by being supported by them. Then we begin to depend on them. Then before long we are exploiting them to keep other parts of the psyche down. Picture the classic movie image where someone gets into trouble and immediately pours themselves a drink. They gulp back the alcohol and the whole ritual of release with a vengeance, and suddenly they feel empowered. In time, however, such addictive patterns are not empowering, but disempowering. They give temporary relief with one hand, while with the other hand they cut us from the ground on which we stand. And then the psyche needs to split from itself again, from the inner addict. I'm not addicted. It's just that I enjoy pornography. It gives me a feeling of freedom. We refuse to be responsible for our destructive addictions, partly because of the social judgment that would be there if we own it, if we cross over the line from normal person to addict. The psyche of good society has literally split itself off from the society of addicts. Addiction is a phenomenon that we tend to section in the dark alleyways of crack addicts, the overlit halls of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the bleak web of losers and no-hopers. We are still far from recognizing the ubiquitous nature of addiction. If you say to me, "You are an addict," I feel accused, condemned, dehumanized, and threatened with banishment. The accusation of addiction has become a primal way to reject unwanted members from the tribe. Yet increasingly, the tribe itself is bonding through choice patterns of addiction. We bond and find unity through the ritual of the pub at lunchtime. The joint passes as an opener when friends gather. Or the family cohesion depends on regular time spent invested in the next episode of a suspenseful TV series. Addictive patterns are so much part of the state of the psyche, whether it is individual, collective, or ancestral, that its destructive form has been normalized, sanitized, and even prescribed. Addiction is described as those habits which are detrimental to our well-being, and when we look deeper into it, most of our collective habits are detrimental to our well-being. Whether it is our addiction to fossil fuels, to electronics, or to the kind of wealth in which the value is all put in the car, mortgage, and the pension. In so many ways, our culture and conditioning are actively promoting addictive pathologies, at the same time as criminalizing the most chronic effects of this promotion. Addiction becomes a suffering when we try to take something from the outside to fill the sense of lack on the inside. Our relationship with our true nature shifts. Whereas we could be fulfilled, expressing and receiving qualities such as love, peace, and release through the world, we now begin to depend on something in the world to give us those qualities. For example, we seek the chocolate to give us the sense of love, rather than loving the experience of chocolate. Each time we try to fulfill our inner lack or to get a sense of belonging through an external object, We affirm the lack and end up feeling unfulfilled, lonely, and disconnected. Addiction begins to release when we remember ourselves as the source or risk being the source. When we allow ourselves to be the one that is able to intuit, sense, and explore the sense of lack, lack comes to life, and we begin to remember ourselves as the source of all life. There is a unifying principle found in our underlying, undifferentiated awareness that pervades all experience of any kind. Finding ourselves alive as this boundless awareness means that we undercut the compulsion of addictive patterns. We become less grasping, and our aversion is no longer anything other than a passing unpleasantness. At this time, our conditioning and culture deeply advocate a reality of inner lack. This can come with a sense of not being enough, not having enough, and not getting enough. We are inculcated with addictive tendencies from childhood. There is such a strength in this that we lose our natural context and the permission for our authentic spontaneity of movement. It can feel almost dissonant to say that something as simple as a daily walk in nature could be worth more for our well-being than psychiatric medication. Mindfulness, bringing attention to the natural rhythm of our breathing, is seen as fringe and slightly alternative. Yes, being conscious of your breath is alternative. Yet, on the unsold fringes of our scientific literature, the evidence is there that such ways of being alive tremendously support our physical, psychological, and collective well-being. We are conditioned into a mindset of lack and self-condemnation, and this has begotten spirals of collective, addictive behavior in which we are losing our direction and our sense of purpose. Yet still, the wheel of suffering turns. What is the official definition of addiction? Addiction is a treatable chronic medical disease involving complex interactions among brain circuits, genetics, the environment, and an individual's life experiences. People with addiction use substances or engage in behaviors that become compulsive and often continue despite harmful consequences. Prevention efforts and treatment approaches for addiction are generally as successful as those for other chronic diseases. This standard definition states that addiction is caused by interactions between our brain circuits, read conditioning, genetics, read inherited trauma, stress responses and resilience, environment, read education, culture, society, collective pathology, and individual life experiences, read trauma. When you put it together, you find that the causes of addiction include just about everything. They are personal, collective, infective, contagious, inherited, historic, and mental. All of these are mixed up together in a perfect storm, the storm that makes you an addict. But it is also the storm that makes you human. Addiction is stated as a chronic medical disease with holistic causes combining just about everything, biology, nature, and nurture. Something in the power, methodology, and logic of addiction is so prevalent as to be part of our makeup. But it only becomes addiction when it is judged as bad or destructive to the well-being of the whole. Yet part of the badness and destructive effect of addiction is the result of the accusation of badness. Perhaps initially we sought our relief through certain rituals because we were in pain. When that habit is judged, the habit is made bad, but also our pain is made bad. The whole lot becomes bad. We are becoming badness. The door of compassion closes. After judging addiction as bad, we add to the addict the energy of badness, shame and guilt, which has a potency that can demonize the core pain, giving it a resonance of evil. The accusation of being a perpetrator of harm accentuates the contraction and its unbearable resonance. As it is bad, destructive, and evil, we seek to control addiction and the addict. Yet when this control involves humiliation, domination, forced submission, repression, and oppression, when it has the resonance of prohibition, it further demonizes the pain. It repeats the original movement of contraction or trauma. It isolates and disconnects the person from their own center and vitality. In the words of addiction expert Scott Killerby, emphasizing I should and I shouldn't thoughts around an addictive substance or activity actually helps keep the addiction around, as it creates a sense of self that seems to have control. If control were truly the answer to addiction, humans wouldn't still be addicted, because everyone is already trying to control addictions. It isn't working. Who decides between the shoulds and shouldn'ts in our lives, and according to what value system? Often the conditions we put on each other reflect the conditions we put on ourselves. These conditions are mostly born of fear and pain. They are based on avoiding that outcome or that pain. We seek to deal with pain rather than to heal it. To heal it, we need to find it, wherever it is hidden and behind whatever it is hidden. Even when our deeper pain is hidden behind a bottle, inside an addict who appears as the stranger that we can't forgive. Our deeper need is to acknowledge that we are responsive to this pain. When we deny the pain, loss, or trauma within addictive patterns and begin to dictate behavior on others, we assume a standard without really standing for it, and then we begin a whole circulating pandemic of shame and blame. The habit of needing habits. How can we make this natural, rhythmic, ritualistic support system of repeating patterns of behavior work for us and not against us? How can we take the prison bars and find a scaffold for freedom in form, a ladder to the heavens? An addictive tendency that brings well-being for the whole is clearly more needed than one that brings illness and death. How then do we harness the power of addiction for the greater good? Not by denying it, but by riding its power. The pressure, compulsion, vitality, and transformative power within the movement of passion resembles the addictive mechanism. Only here there is an orientation toward the well-being of others through which the biochemistry of reward is spontaneously arising. We can take the passion, but leave the battle for the bottle behind. What is an addict? Here we see the definition is not just covering substance abuse, food, alcohol, drugs, but also behaviors. What is behind both substance and behavior is the factor of compulsion. Our actions are compelled by a force which is greater than the authority that says we should not. To be compelled is to be forced, so addiction is when we are forced into a certain pattern. Yet the addict is often treated as the one having the compulsion. They are compulsive, rather than the one who is compelled. There is a split into two, a war going on between good and bad, which delivers a kind of stress and distress that seeks relief one way or another. Within this compulsion is the intense energetic charge of pain. Empowering addiction is that sense of unbearable agony in the psyche, which is at once deeply true and utterly disavowed. We find that torment in the areas where we lose our compassion, where we break down, where the resonance is an ongoing torture and is therefore unforgivable. In the words of Gabor Mate, not all addictions are rooted in abuse or trauma, but I do believe they can all be traced to painful experience. A hurt is at the center of all addictive behaviors. It is present in the gambler, the internet addict, the compulsive shopper, and the workaholic. The wound may not be as deep and the ache not as excruciating, and it may even be entirely hidden. But it's there. As we'll see, the effects of early stress or adverse experiences directly shape both the psychology and the neurobiology of addiction in the brain. The addictive substance or behavior is the one thing that delivers a momentary sense of wholeness or freedom from conflict. The divisive nature of the ongoing war is also found into the splitting into competing external authorities. The authority that says you must not drink that whiskey, and the authority that says that you must. Either way, the whiskey is the issue, so it always wins. The substance becomes the common ground between the should and the shouldn't. At least with the whiskey, we move beyond conflict. In whiskey, we are one. The standard definition of addiction continues with the stipulation that these compulsions are those that have harmful consequences. Notice the judgment. Judgment heaps the energy of badness on whatever it is that you are compelled to do. It puts badness on your compulsion. This badness includes the vibrations of shame, guilt, and abuse. Your addiction has consequences. So now you're not a victim, but a perpetrator. So we can add cruelty to the list. There is a visceral threat of evil in it, and that evil is pushed toward the addict with his generational, environmental, cognitive, personal brain mess of perpetual badness. This badness is constantly refilled by the scorn of others. So the addict now also suffers extra helpings of loneliness, isolation, condemnation, and despair. The self-destruction drive-through goes turbo. At this stage, let us breathe and take in a timely reminder. We are all prone to addiction. We are all addicts. We are addicted to being stupefied by our smartphones and to shutting down socially with social media. We sit stunned in our addiction to the news and to movie channels of terror, suspense, and ridicule. We are addicted to fast food, slow thought, and chemical killers of pain. We are compelled into easier ways to shop, lazier ways to survive, and cheaper ways to ignore the itching questions of our own life force. We toast the destruction of the planet with petrol and fly everywhere while bellowing smoke across the oceans. We are compelled to attend to sexual abuse, tyrants, war, atrocity, and injustice, and we revel in it as long as it is far out there, away from our private, separate, inner world. We are addicted because the horror somehow makes us feel alive. We are addicted because in some forsaken precinct of the soul we feel slightly less alone. And when we are done fumigating the soul through projection on the world, we re-engage with lame small talk and grandiose blame. We are addicted to being someone and to losing no one. We drown ourselves in casual desire and snort the toxins of gender hate to spice things up. We lie and we buy ourselves into prisons of choice. We are all addicted, and despite the harmful consequences, we have sorely neglected and denied our inborn passion for life. If that last paragraph of Holy Rant makes you angry, let it. This is your own intimate passion on the rise. If for a moment we could take the sense of badness out of our collective state of addiction and instead be curious about this tendency to seek well-being in all the wrong places, then we begin to find a middle way to wholeness. What we know for sure, between our sorry state as addicts and our unfulfilled state as good citizens, is that both are seeking well-being. Yet well-being is not a stagnant state of goodism. It is a tremendous, powerful magnetic force. It is an impulse that runs through everyone and everything, from the source of me directly to the source of you. It is where the point of me finds the point of you. Well-being seeks itself through manifold form. It is unstoppable. It is right here, where we are one. That which can never be lost. You can fleece an individual of everything, but you will never take away her incessant search for well-being. The force within the passage between one soul and another, through the physical wilderness of creative possibility, is what we call passion. Well-being awakens, meets, and unifies through all forms of life, through the power of passion. We have been frustrated in our natural passionate manifestation. According to the stated definition of addiction by genetic, mental, environmental, and personal patterns. In the previous chapter, we looked into boredom, how the energy of passion has been frozen, numbed, and disabled through congealed areas of insensitivity in the psyche. Yet boredom alone cannot block passion, only part of it. We still crave release, purpose, reward, and fulfillment. We still fiercely long to be part of the whole. The life force of the whole universe, sourced in infinite abundance, is putting a perpetual pressure for movement, manifestation, and freedom in form. There is a sense of pending combustion as the pressure of unreleased passion builds up inside ourselves and we begin to feel deeply uncomfortable within the limitations of our own skin. We are longing to shed the skin, to grow, to live, to love, and to return to naturalness. Even the patterns, plans, agendas, and prohibitions, and the whole strength of collective man cannot ultimately dumb this pressure of passion down. One effect of the contraction of passion into the density of boredom is that of repetition. We start to cling to the known, the safe, and the predictable. This shows up as reflexes and habits. These reflexes and habits are formed, like the boredom, according to the principle of attaining pleasure and avoiding pain, of feeling good and not bad. But the freedom of experience depends on confrontations with the unknown, and we try to stabilize ourselves into known, predictable patterns. These patterns include patterns of behavior, patterns of reactivity, patterns of intake, and patterns of expression. Our habits show up as eating habits, drinking habits, habitual expressions, and habitual organizations of time, space, and movement. Some of our addictive, predictable, compulsive behaviors can become deeply boring to ourselves and others. The core of passion is still throbbing behind the crust of the personality, wanting to break loose. Passion in naturalness brings direction, unconditional reward, fulfillment, and the sense of purpose. Although it relieves us of the internal pressure to manifest, it actually increases the vitality that is available to manifest even more. It energizes us from the cellular level, easing the heart and opening the mind. It gives voice to all that need to speak, while listening with the ears of eternity to all that needs to be heard. As it moves with compassion, it longs to meet itself, passing over the perimeters of separation, unconfused by passages of isolation. But sometimes it seems impossible to come there, and this is where addictive patterns get a grip. Feeling bored or numbed down within ourselves, separated from the authenticity of our own life force and bereft of purpose, we seek relief on the outside. We trade the long game of the soul's manifestation for the short game of passing personal gratification, and we trade our heroes for ghosts. That external crutch, that substance, relationship, behavior, or activity, does bring a sense of relief. The energy is at least on the move. It feels purposeful for a while. It gives a passing sense of reward. Dopamine is released in the brain, and there are moments of bliss, but the effect is short-lived. We fall back into the dense nothing of the inner world. As our tolerance to the substance increases, so does our intolerance to states of boredom. We reach further and further outside of ourselves for more, yet we always seem to end up with less. We start to hunger for ever greater quantities to get that moment of bliss. But the more we reach out, the more we get the thundering sense of absolutely nothing on the inside. We feel unbearably hollow. The speed of gain and loss accelerates as we spiral further and further away from our seemingly coreless center through increasing degrees of dependency. You can't trust life, but you can trust the next joint to make you feel a little better. All of physical life and evolution is based on learning through patterns of repetition. Our days and nights, our bodies and the psyche are all orchestrated through rhythms of sacred ritual. Even our thoughts and the language we speak are made up of repeated encodings, consensual expressions, and habitual blind spots. That is partly why each chapter of this book begins with a common and vaguely absurd idiom. Addiction is when these rituals become ritualistic slavery, where we are no longer empowered but subjugated, where we are no longer manifesting but possessed, where we are no longer expanding in well-being but are held hostage by whole gangs of second-hand sufferings. Passion, like poetry and great literature, will disrupt patterns. It will form new patterns to fly with and will junk the ones that held it back. Passion arises from the field of infinite potential as an alchemical energy that can pull the angel out of the devil's heart and the victory out of demolition. It is that power that can set us free so that we are no longer enslaved to patterns, but rather our patterns work for us. Yet to step out of the conditions of suffering, we need to put down our precious attempts to survive in separation from the whole. This means unleashing the passion to be of service to the greater well-being. When we stop the behavior or withdraw the substance, we can be faced with implosion into the hell realms of castrated, bored, horrified energy that have built up within us. Part of this can be the energy of pure self-destruction, the zone of suicidal energy. Here there is a blizzard of violence acting against itself due to the impossibility of expressing such a voltage into the world. The urge to outer violence, to cut yourself or cut a way through, is backfiring in a blizzard of inner violence, where murderer and victim entwine. It is the loneliest, most desperate space, and it would be worthwhile to realize that we all, every one of us, share it. It is a blizzard of conflicting sensations, but it does not define the sky. Around this hell, we find those core wounds and those emotional structures of pain and humiliation that initially caused the lockdown. All we need is to let ourselves be passionate enough to let them breathe. When we find the passion in the process releases still more passion. When we allow our sensitivity, it begins to make sense. The deeper sense of purpose in the experience awakens. Compassion spontaneously arises to meet the revelation of that which has been denied. Even if we have no memory of a signature event or no known cause for our distress, we need not falter. The sense of being distressed is its own validation. The need for justification is part of the paradigm that created the block in the first place. It rapidly squanders us into the consensual compulsion to split the world into right and wrong. Liberation comes with a shift in attitude to suffering. When distress is allowed to be here, and when we are allowed to feel it in its purity, expanding as the pure awareness around and through it, it will no longer obstruct our purpose, but will become part of it. The healing power of passion is arising, lighting up all that it touches with pristine innocence. Passion will create and destroy our conditioning. It will reinvent our rituals. Bringing instant fulfillment that can never be lost, it is a game changer of the psyche that will reward us with pleasure, pain, loss, and gain all the way to kingdom come.